KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is KAEB 91.9 on your FM dial. Your one-stop shop in Sandpoint from classic oldies to banging new modern.
From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
A Kodiak fisherman was sentenced last month to a year in jail for illegally shipping diseased tanner crab from Alaska to Washington. The Alaska Beacon reports that Corey Potter will also spend 2 years on supervised release and will be barred from commercial fishing anywhere in the world during that time. As reported by KMXT's Brian Benoit, the sentence comes after a federal investigation found that Potter told his two boat's captains to move crab harvested in Alaska to Seattle for higher sale prices, which is illegal. Both captains also pled guilty last year to violating the Lacey Act, which bans importing possibly harmful wildlife like the diseased tanners. Potter's boats, the Arctic Dawn and Gambler, had nearly 4,300 pounds of live tanner crab and nearly 3,000 pounds of golden king crab on board. Kyle Potter was issued a $20,000 fine and faces 5 years probation and a worldwide ban on commercial fishing. Justin Welch paid a $10,000 fine and was sentenced to 3 years of probation. According to a press release last week from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the captains knew some of their haul was, quote, almost certainly infected, close quote, with bitter crab syndrome, which is lethal to crabs but not to humans. The parasitic disease can be identified by crab shells turning red or orange, as well as the blood and flesh having a milky look to it. None of the crab made it to market, according to reporting from the Beacon. They were instead seized by the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife and sent to a landfill. The Alaska Beacon reports the government is also seeking nearly $190,000 in restitution, and a hearing on that is set for July.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Amid serious conservation concerns, Yukon River communities are headed into another summer of near-total salmon fishing closures. And as KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, it doesn't look like the situation will improve in the near future.
Aside from a possible brief opening to harvest summer chum salmon, 2025 will be the sixth consecutive year of total salmon fishing closures on the Yukon River. Beginning June 1st, the first of a series of rolling salmon fishing closures will go into effect on the lower Yukon, The closures will then work their way upriver, following Chinook and summer chum salmon on their journey toward the Canadian border. As in recent years, residents will be able to harvest non-salmon fish using 4-inch set nets, considered small enough to avoid catching salmon, but not totally able to avoid incidental catch. But even those nets will be limited for periods of the summer. Yukon River Federal In-Season Manager Holly Carroll explained in a public hearing hosted by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in May that a 2-week complete gillnet closure put in place last year to protect Chinook will likely be extended.
Chinook harvest in some areas did still increase. And so for this year, we think a 3-week closure at the height of the Chinook run, time to move upriver with the Chinook, would better protect them and might reduce some of that incidental harvest that's still occurring in those 4-inch gill nets.
According to Carroll, the 4-inch set nets used to harvest non-salmon will also be limited in the later part of the season to protect fall chum and coho runs. Beginning July 16th, fisheries managers plan to limit their use to a 3-day weekend schedule. As part of the recent hearing, residents of communities along hundreds of miles of river shared about the loss of culture and economic hardship faced as a result of the salmon closures, as well as the health issues that come with an increasing reliance on non-native foods. And the restrictions reach far beyond the mouth of the Yukon River. Residents of Hooper Bay and Chivac, more than 100 miles away, echoed many of the same concerns as Yukon communities, but also expressed doubts that their coastal harvests were directly impacting the river's stocks. Carroll explained that ocean harvests of Chinook by the coastal communities have historically been small. She said more research is needed to understand run composition, but that tagging studies have shown the restrictions are biologically justified.
The truth is that the entire Yukon area, all the fish passing that area, are very likely to be Yukon-oriented because of the timing of them coming past your villages. They're unlikely to be completely Kuskokwim or completely Norton Sound. So we have to protect them.
Overall, the total Yukon River Chinook run is projected to be roughly 72,000 fish. Just 30,000 of these are expected to make it across the Canadian border, where an international agreement was signed last year to completely suspend the harvest of Yukon River Chinook salmon for 7 years. The fall chum salmon run and much smaller coho salmon run are also projected to fall well below what managers consider a harvestable surplus. In 2024, both species saw their third lowest returns on record. The summer chum run, a small bright spot for some Yukon River communities in recent years, is likely to meet the upper end of escapement goals. If opened, harvest would be limited to less efficient, selective gear like dip nets that allow Chinook to be released alive. But federal and state fisheries managers, who together manage the river in a patchwork, have agreed on a cautious approach due to low run sizes in the years when the fish's parents spawned. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has issued an emergency order aimed at slowing the harvest of rockfish in North Gulf Coast and Cook Inlet waters this summer. To head off a potential overharvest, the department has cut the number of pelagic rockfish that can be retained from 3 to 2 per day and limited non-pelagic rockfish to 1 per day through September 15th. Pelagic rockfish, like black rockfish, move up and down the water column searching for prey. Non-pelagic rockfish like yellow eye stay on the bottom. Retention of yellow eye rockfish will be strictly prohibited through June to protect them during their reproductive cycle. The new limits are an attempt to account for displaced fishing effort, according to the emergency order. Guided charter boats in Cook Inlet have traditionally depended on halibut and salmon for their clients to catch. The department says populations of both of these desirable species have been in decline and catch levels have been so low, charter operators have had to look for different quarry. From 2023 to 2024, harvest of black rockfish in Cook Inlet increased by 17%, and the harvested of the coveted yellow-eye rockfish shot up by 35%, according to data from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Limits on king salmon and halibut harvests for the fleet are even more restrictive than ever for 2025, and as a consequence, the department is expecting the Sportfish charter fleet will further increase its rockfish harvest. Rockfish live long lives, and they grow and mature slowly. Black rockfish live to be 50 years old and are not mature until age 6. Yellow-eye live to be 118 and are not mature until they reach age 22. Biological composition data compiled by the department shows that a high percentage of the harvested rockfish are sexually immature, suggesting that a compositional shift of the slow-maturing fish is already taking place. Their sampling also shows that rockfish are homesteaders, that is, they often live their entire lives in one small area. This increases their risk of overexploitation.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
A 9-year-old has won the Sitka Salmon Derby for the second time in 3 years. Caleb Gray brought in the biggest fish near the beginning of the 5-day event, and no one else ever came close. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Caleb Gray is standing on the weigh-in barge in Sitka's Crescent Harbor Sunday afternoon as the seconds count down toward the end of the 70th Sitka Salmon Derby. There's always a chance someone might come charging in right at the wire with a bigger fish, but no other boats are in sight. Caleb sounds the horn, bringing the derby to an end and sealing his victory. It's deja vu all over again as he performed this same task 2 years ago as a 7-year-old.
Sound the horn. That's the unofficial.
Gray will take home $20,000 prize money if the result stands, and it likely will. His 34-pound king was over 2 pounds larger than his nearest competitor. Todd Nevers will take second place with a 31.8-pound king. Jeremiah Johnson will take third with a 30.8-pound king. All results are unofficial until the awards ceremony on June 12th in Harrigan Centennial Hall. With a one-fish bag limit, this was not the largest derby, but participants did surprisingly well despite gale-force winds that blew through on both weekends. 155 people fished in the event, turning in 312 kings, weighing an average of 15 pounds. Collectively, that makes about 4,700 pounds of fish. Only 12 competitors turned in a fish each of the 5 days of the Derby. That kept total poundage averages below a more typical event with a larger bag limit and better conditions. In addition to his third-place win, Jeremiah Johnson will claim the total poundage prize with 101.5 pounds. Riley Bernhardt, who won total poundage in 2019 as an 11-year-old, is in second place with 96.7 pounds. And Kerry Gray will take third with 95.7 pounds. Kerry Gray is the mother of 2-time champion Caleb Gray. Their boat, by the way, is the appropriately named Relentless. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, delivering the essentials for everyday life in the last frontier. Learn more at madsen.com/Alaska.
Now, the rest of the story. Chet was dying. It had been a long illness, but at last the end was near. Tuesday, November 16, a remarkable resurgence of strength, bedridden for weeks, Chet decided that morning to rise and dress and greet his two sisters. And they reminisced for hours about childhood experiences, and for the first time in a long time, Chet seemed happy. But then at once a strange and surprised expression came over his face, as though he had suddenly remembered something important and secret. He summoned his son, Alan. He said, "Boy, get me Jimmy Smith." Well, Alan obeyed, and within the hour, Chet's longtime friend was standing in the parlor. Jimmy Smith had known Chet from the old days. Chet said, "We'd like to be alone," so young son Alan left the room. Had he not hesitated outside the doorway to listen, we might never have learned the rest of the story. Chet told Jimmy, "I want all of my papers destroyed." Jimmy seemed to understand. There was no astonishment at all in his voice when he asked, personal or otherwise. Chet repeated, "All my papers." And he added that the task must not be put off. It must be finished before sundown. Three large garbage cans were brought into the house. As Chet supervised, Jimmy pulled stacks of documents from shelves and cabinets and file drawers. The papers were then heaped into the garbage cans, taken out of the house and burned. Jimmy never glanced at the doomed documents. He just listened as Chet told him where to find them, tossed them into the cans, disposed of them. No one remembers how many can loads of papers were destroyed that afternoon, but when the job was done, Chet and Jimmy Smith shook hands, and they parted, and they never saw each other again. Chet's son Alan watched it all, and would always recall that night when Chet went to bed a happy man, and it was while he slept that the stroke struck. The cerebral hemorrhage was so massive that he never regained full consciousness. He lingered a day, breathing his last, as the first gray of light of the following morning crept into the bedroom. And those who were there observed a gentle smile of resignation on Chet's face. Maybe this is why. Biographers ever since have been frustrated by the phenomenal lack of original source material relevant to Chet's life. The burning of his personal and official papers only hours before he died is the reason a lot of secrets went up in smoke in the autumn of 1886, leaving the specter of untold indiscretion and corruption. He once confided there were many things in his political career of which he was not proud, and he once sternly advised his son, "Never go into politics, boy. Never go into politics." A curious warning from Chet. Chester Alan Arthur, the 21st President of the United States. But I think you now know the rest of the story.
You're listening to Statewide News from Alaska Public Media. I'm Ava White. The North Slope Borough Search and Rescue Team recovered the remains of the pilot and passenger who died in a helicopter crash on the North Slope near Dead Horse on Wednesday, according to the National Transportation Safety Board. There were no survivors. The two people have not yet been publicly identified. The borough mayor's office said in a press release that next of kin have been notified. Sam Maxwell is the general manager and owner of the Wasilla-based Pollux Aviation, which operated the helicopter. He says the aircraft was assisting with a shorebird survey out of Prudhoe Bay.
We are helping the NTSB and the FAA determine the cause of the accident, and our hearts and our prayers go out to the families.
Clint Johnson is Alaska's NTSB chief. He says NTSB plans to get to the wreckage today after the weather clears and before snow arrives in the area this weekend. Senator Lisa Murkowski doesn't like major elements of the big reconciliation bill the House passed last month, legislation loaded with President Trump's priorities. But she says the bill is still taking shape in the Senate, and how she'll ultimately vote is unknown, even to the senator herself. Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
A huge scrum of reporters surrounded Murkowski when she paused in a Capitol hallway to take a question. She says no one is calling to win her vote because there's no bill yet, just a lot of moving parts.
Do you feel confident that with some adjustments that you can get to yes on that bill?
Well, what is that bill? Because that bill is, it's not being defined just by Lisa Murkowski. Everyone is pulling this Gumby in lots of different directions, right?
Murkowski's take on the reconciliation package is closely watched. Trump can only afford to lose the votes of three Republican senators, and Murkowski is among a handful who have significant objections. She says she's studying the details. She downplayed the impact any pressure President Trump might exert.
If it works for Alaska, he's not going to need to pressure me. If it works for Alaska, it works for me. It gets my vote.
Murkowski has previously stated that she won't vote for a bill that takes health insurance away from her constituents. An analysis by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office found the bill would leave 11 million fewer people insured nationwide while adding $2.4 trillion to the budget deficit. Still, Murkowski says she and Senator Dan Sullivan are examining proposed changes to Medicaid and SNAP benefits to see if they're realistic for Alaska to administer. Reporting from the U.S. Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
This is Alaska Public Media.
The Alaska Morning News is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The greatest compliment to a public media station is when a listener becomes a member. So do your part today by becoming a part of the team officially. Thank you for making a donation.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Lilly Endowment, a private foundation supporting NPR's coverage of religion and spirituality, and Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts.
Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove. GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at gci.com/internet.
This is statewide news from Alaska Public Media. I'm Ava White. Anchorage has a huge amount of urban wildlands, which puts the city at risk of wildfires. This summer, multiple agencies are collaborating on a massive effort to try to protect the municipality. As Alaska Public Media's Hannah Floor reports, that means burning brush and a lot of cutting down trees.
All over the Anchorage hillside, firefighters are burning piles of spruce branches. Ethan DeBush is with the State Division of Forestry and Fire Prevention. He's in charge of reducing burnables in wild areas.
It's actually a bit of an art and a science.
It's been a long time since anyone's come in to trim spruce branches and burn underbrush. Doug Schrage is chief of the Anchorage Fire Department. He says nearly two decades ago, budget cuts got in the way of wildfire planning, and not much has been done since. But that all changed last year. The department used federal grant money to hire people focused on wildfire mitigation. And they started a collaboration between a whole bunch of local and state agencies. They're working together to reduce wildfire risk in the city by clearing trees and underbrush and turning them into mulch, and by holding town halls and public education campaigns. They're sharing resources and responsibilities. Schrage says it feels like a new era.
It's really becoming a bit of a community effort in that way, and I love it.
He says there's still a lot to do, but the city is more prepared than it has been in a long time. And he says wildfires in California and Hawaii have shown just how necessary that preparation is. Those fires killed dozens over the past few years and displaced thousands. They destroyed swaths of city, even whole towns. Schrage says he wants to know he's done everything in his power to prevent that from happening here.
That's something that keeps me awake in my current role. And so the weight of that responsibility compelled me to do something.
At a town hall in May, with reps from about a dozen agencies in attendance, Schrage told folks that the threat of wildfires in the area is very real. He said there have been a few close calls in recent years. And while this year's risk level is about average, average isn't great. Climate change is complicating that risk. That's according to Norm McDonald. He's with the State Division of Forestry and Fire Protection. He said all of Alaska is seeing longer, warmer, and drier conditions.
As a kid who grew up in Alaska, I can tell you firsthand of the snow and the cold winters we had as a 10-year-old growing up off the Yarmouth Road compared to what we're seeing now. And I think a lot of you, if you're lifetime Alaskans, have seen, have witnessed that firsthand as well.
It's also complicated by where people are building new homes.
People want to live off the road or off the out of the communities. They want to have their slice of Alaska, which we all understand.
Saving human life is the number one priority, so a lot of work goes into making sure those wooded residential areas are protected, like Anchorage's hillside. There are more than a dozen ongoing or planned projects in the municipality using various approaches to fire management. Take the Campbell Airstrip Road. It's the only way in and out for a community of about 250 homes. The municipality is working on a three-mile-long fire break with nearly 150 feet of land on either side of the road. There's no underbrush and very few trees. The idea is the lack of fuel would slow fires, making it possible to evacuate residents. Back on the hillside, firefighters are sawing lower limbs off spruce trees. Ethan DeBush says that's to make it less likely fire will climb up the branches and into the canopy, where it's harder to put out. He says even with all the noise and smoke, folks in the neighborhood have been supportive.
We've even had some pies, some homemade pies delivered to the crew who was camping.
They were apple pies, but DeBush didn't get any. It was his day off. He says his crew did make sure to tell him just how delicious they were, though. In Anchorage, I'm Hannah Floor.
This is Alaska Public Media.
I'd trade all of my tomorrows for just one yesterday. For what good is life without the one you love? I'd trade all of my tomorrows, they're worthless anyway. If the one I can't hold, the one I'm dreaming of, just an empty world is all I have before me. I'd give anything with me now. I'd trade all of my tomorrows for just one yesterday. I don't want to live without you anyhow. Just an empty world is all I have before me. I'd give anything if you were with me now. I'd trade all of my tomorrows for just one yesterday. I don't want to live without you anyhow.
Early one morning, with time to kill, I borrowed Jeb's rifle and sat on the hill. I saw a lone rider crossing the plain. I drew a bead on him to practice my aim. My brother's rifle went off in my hand. A shot rang out across the land. The horse he kept running, the rider was dead. I hung my head, I hung my head. I set off running to wake from the dream. My brother's rifle went into the sheen. I kept on running into the Southlands. That's where they found me, my head in my hands. The sheriff, he asked me, why had I run? And then it came to me, just what I had done. And all for no reason, just one piece of lead. I hung my head, I hung my head. Here in the courthouse, the whole town was there. I see the judge high up in his chair. Explain to the courtroom what went through your mind. And we'll ask the jury what verdict they find. I felt the power of death over life. I orphaned his children. I widowed his wife. I beg their forgiveness. I wish I was dead. I hung my head. I hung my head. I hung my head. Early one morning, with time to kill, I see the gallows up on the hill. And out in the distance, a trick of the brain, I see a lone rider crossing the plain. And he come to fetch me to see what they done. And we'll ride together till kingdom come. I pray for God's mercy, cause soon I'll be dead. I hung my head, I hung my head. I hung my head, I hung my head.
you loved me. I believed every single word you said. Then you showed me that you didn't mean it. That you loved somebody else instead. I should have seen the warning. I was busy coming back for more. I know you got a right to change your mind. Well, I've got a right.
Now won't you batter down the Baton Rouge
river queen, roll it on. Take that woman on down to New Orleans, New Orleans. Oh, I've had enough, done my blues down in the Gulf. She loves you, big river, more than me.
Clouds out of cover of a clear blue sky, and the tears I cry for that woman are gonna flood you, big river,
and I'm gonna sit right here until I die.
Tell me that I'm no saint. I'm the first to know I ain't. There's a little thing called love, and that's what changed me. From an innocent country girl to a woman of the world, the night I let you
of a gun, and
So ride me down, easy Lord, ride me on down. Leave word in the dust where I lay. Say I'm easy come, easy go, and easy love when I stay. Ride me down, easy Lord, ride me on down.
come a little closer, put your little hand in mine. Let me feel your arms about me, honey, please don't change your mind. For my lovesick heart's a-throbbin' as I hold you close to mine. Bound to have a lot of lovin' waiting for long on the line. Why don't you haul off and love me one more time? Why don't you squeeze me until I'm turning blind? If you don't cuddle up and love me like I want you to do, I'm gonna haul off and die over you. Warm lips near me, hear your breathing soft and fine. I can feel the matrimony crawling up and down my spine. I don't believe that love will hurt you, cause it feels so nice and kind. It seems mighty close to heaven when your love is on the line. Why don't you haul off and love me one more time? Why don't you squeeze me until I'm turning blind? If you don't cuddle up and love me like I want you to do, I'm gonna haul off and die over you.
It's no secret, somebody waits at home for you. And I know how hard it's so if you really believe this love is so wrong, we don't have to carry on. But still I wonder, why does it have to be wrong or right?
Why does it have to be one way or the other?
Won't somebody please, please tell me, why does it have to be black or white?
Why do we have to hurt one to love another?
Oh, tell why does it have to be?
Can't say that you didn't know where this might lead. And I know I couldn't have been that hard to read. But we both know this is not where you belong. There's no need to carry on. Oh, but I can't help but wonder,
why does it have to be wrong? To be black or white?
Why do we have to hurt one to love another?
Oh, tell me,
oh, tell me why.
Oh, tell me, why does it have to be wrong or right?
Why does it have to be one way or the other?
Won't somebody please,
please tell me,
why does it have to be black or white?
Why do we have to hurt one to love another?
Oh, tell me,
oh, tell me why.
Say you were wrong to ever leave me alone, and now you're sorry, you're lonesome and scared. And you say you'd be happy if you could just come back home. Well, here's a quarter, call someone who cares.
someone who'll listen and might give a damn. Maybe one of your sordid affairs. But don't you come around here handing me none of your lies. Here's a quarter, call someone who cares. Never turn back. So you're leaving, caught me unaware. But the fact is, you've wrong, girl. That can't be undone. So here's a quarter, call someone who cares. Call someone who listens. Yeah, might give a damn. Maybe one of your sordid affairs. But don't you come around here handing me none of your lies. Now here's a quarter, call someone who cares. Yeah, here's a quarter, call someone who cares. Yeah, yeah.
Funding for KSDP is made possible in part by the King Cove Corporation, operating the Fleets, Inn Hotel, the Heart Lakes Apartments, and the Last Hook Off Tavern. The King Cove Corporation is a proud sponsor of KSDP.
The ballroom was empty. They played the last waltz for my darling and me. My poor heart kept wishing the night would not end, for she loved another and I'm just her friend. I love her, I love her, my lonely heart cries, but soon she'll become another man's bride. She told me next Sunday was her wedding day. I gave my best wishes, what more could I say? That night will be cherished. They played the last waltz for my darling.